Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
And we are live here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You're listening to Fantasy Sports Today. Kevin Walsh here. And I'm going to be joined by George Kurtz for hours 2 and 3. But we're going to start off with Mike Blewett here on this Memorial Day weekend. Mike, how's it going?
Good. Getting ahead of yourself. I'm not ready to shut down this summer with Labor Day weekend. So that's let me right. kick it off with Memorial Day weekend. But good to be on the show. Glad to join you here for this hour. I'm out of town, but I wanted to call in and spend some time because obviously we had a lot of NBA action, and last night was a great game. Great game by LeBron and a fun game to watch.
So, yeah, that I think that's the appropriate place to start with the Cavs back up against the wall. They had to win, obviously, Game 6 if they even wanted to see the Game 7, and they get it done. They win in Cleveland, 101-99, and the story of the game, and I think it is no surprise, LeBron James, 46 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 steals, and a block. He made 5 threes and was a plus 15 for the game, which was a team high, a game high, of course, and maybe the most important number of all, though, 46, not points, but minutes played. The only time he sat, I think that it was under a minute left, actually, in the third and under a minute left in the fourth. It was one of the all-time performances for LeBron James, and I mean, I don't know what else to say. Mike, what was your reaction to it?
I don't know that I've seen him play a better game other than closing out the Warriors 2 years ago. That one is, as you said, an all-timer. The fact that, you know, he even got banged up midway through the fourth quarter. It looked kind of bad initially, and he didn't even come out of the game. He just waved off to Ron Lue and everybody else. There was, I think at that point, maybe 4 or 5 minutes left when that happened. So it was great. I mean, the rest of the team was 4 of 16 from three. George Hill obviously chipped in with some key points. The fourth quarter, I found the second half to be wildly entertaining, particularly the fourth quarter. I think defense started to sag a little bit because the teams were tired, but guys were hitting big shots. Terry Rozier was sort of trading back and forth with the Cavs at one point. They couldn't cut the lead. The Cavs couldn't increase the lead for much of that fourth quarter. So it hovered around 7 for much of the fourth quarter.
I will say one of the things that, you know, is probably going to end up being lost in this performance is the Kevin Love injury, and it'll be relevant obviously depending on whether he's going to play in Game 7, but just it is another variable that adds to just how impressive of a game this was. And listen, George Hill was great, 7 of 12 from the floor, chipped in 20 points. They got huge minutes from not only Jeff Green, but Larry Nance, honestly, maybe even played himself into the starting lineup. But for LeBron James, I mean, think about the narrative that surrounds this team, right? It is an incredibly weak supporting cast. This team does not have the luxury to lose their second best player in Kevin Love. 5 minutes into the game, he gets the concussion, and honestly, I don't know about you, but I don't think anybody really batted an eye or was expecting it to be this detrimental blow to the Cavs. Part of that, of course, was them playing at home and some of the road struggles that exist for the Celtics, but I'd say, again, more than anything, it's the faith that there was no way LeBron was going to be losing this game.
I think that is a big part of it, but it also, we can gloss over it a little bit now because those other guys did play well. Mm. Nance played particularly well in the fourth quarter. LeBron had, I mean, it was an incredible block by Marcus Smart, but Larry Nance was there to clean it up. Nance cleaned up a couple of other shots as well. I'm with you. I think you absolutely can make an argument for him to be in the starting lineup, but maybe they'll like his energy off the bench. When it comes to a player like that, I don't think it matters one way or the other. But I think we can gloss over it because Hill played well, because Nance gave them really good minutes down the stretch. And thirdly, you know, Korver only hits the two threes for 6 points. And sometimes he is outmatched defensive on the defensive end. But to his credit, he is a – and Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson talked about it last night. He is such a max effort guy at 37 years of age. I mean, he's 4 years older than LeBron, and he's getting a good amount of minutes and giving them max effort every time. While some guys will score on him, he's at least contesting each and every shot. So I can appreciate that a guy like that is a is an important role player for the Cavs.
I think that's one of the things that really is kind of standing out for this Cavs team is they need the effort. And I think that's part of the reason, too, why Larry Nance's performance popped out as much as it did. In 22 minutes, he was plus 10. He scored 10 points on 5 of 5 from the field and 7 boards, also with a pair of steals. I think that's really what they need. And, of course, you know, I think, especially with the way that Boston has been, it has been quite noted that role players typically are much better at home than on the road because they can feed off the crowd. But I feel like Larry Nance is a guy who always has that energy, and it also applies to Kyle Korver. It almost feels like because of what you can almost guarantee LeBron is going to give you, it's almost, for some of these other guys, it's just try. If you try, that'll probably be enough help for LeBron to actually get him to where we need to be.
Yeah, and look, the MJ Jordan, the MJ LeBron debate will rage on, and we can talk about it in more detail a little bit later. But one thing you can say for LeBron is, and frankly, it came up the other night when Steve Kerr was talking to Kevin Durant during a couple of those timeouts, ESPN or TNT, I can't remember, caught sound of. And there were times where MJ didn't distribute the ball and he did put it all on himself. But LeBron regularly from the beginning of the game through as much time as he can really tries to get the other guys involved. He does a very good job distributing the ball when necessary. Now, hitting those back-to-back threes in Horford's face was LeBron just saying, you know what, I'm going to try and end this on my own. And they weren't the highest of quality shots, but to the victors go the spoils. But I always can appreciate the fact that LeBron from beginning to end is trying to get others involved, even if there's a lot of eye rolls and that kind of stuff. he is trying his best to get the other teammates involved.
I will say another thing that came out of this game on the Cavs side was LeBron at one point, you know, bumped with Larry Nance, who was on his way down from a rebound. It was incredibly odd where he was holding his shin. It didn't seem like it was his ankle. It seemed as if it was his shin. It is so strange because I feel like every time LeBron is touched, it is a very drawn-out process. And that is not to say that he is faking anything. Maybe he is milking it for a little bit of rest. Maybe he's actually that hurt. But no matter how much it looks like it impacts him, he just seems to walk it off. I think there's a real argument to be made that he is Wolverine.
It's crazy. I've seen him get his nose broken and not come out of the game, really. I've seen something like that happen last night. That was a knee injury. I assume that he got like a slight hyperextension when Nance rolled back into it, and that's why he was kind of clutching his shin. He was trying to pull his knee towards himself. But I thought at the very least he'd come out, and they could call a timeout, you know, give him 30 seconds of game time, one possession. But he was just like, no, I'm just kidding. Wave you guys off, and 2 seconds later he's dribbling the ball right near the half court circle. I'm like, this is sort of unbelievable, but he keeps redefining that. There is a LeBron James hater camp, and many of those people are MJ super fans. I have never been one of those people, despite the fact that I am probably a product of the 80s and 90s where I would normally side with MJ. I'm one of the people that thinks that debate is closer than ever, and I could be convinced that it's LeBron over MJ, but still undecided. Let's say that. I need to see what happens for the rest of LeBron's career. But that being said, like, he is superhuman in that way. MJ was too, you know, played in a finals game with the flu and famously, and never really missed any significant time other than a broken foot earlier in one of his earlier seasons. But They both really are supremely conditioned. I think LeBron talks about it a lot, and he spends hundreds of thousands of dollars annually to make sure he's in that kind of shape. And I think you can tell that he's tired, and everybody else in the world wouldn't be able to do this. He's just able to do it and be tired. So I'm going to tip my cap and not care that he talks about getting rest and all that kind of stuff.
One of my favorite stories I heard, I think it was on a Bill Simmons podcast, he asked David Griffin about just kind of like, well, you know, one of those moments where someone's like, give me your best LeBron story. And the tale pretty much goes to where LeBron not just rolled his ankle. He said he's like bone went on the hardwood, like it was flat. And the trainer was running, he was grabbing the ice, and Griffin asked him, was like, is he going to be okay? And the trainer responded with, does he have a choice? And LeBron, of course, just went back out there and did his thing. It is superhuman, and I think that is one of the things where, for a long time, people vehemently hated LeBron James. And a lot of that stemmed from the decision to go play for Miami. When he won that first championship in Cleveland, I think he swayed a lot of people. And it's now almost to a point where he is beating people into submission. I actually, I got picked up from my brother the other day from the train, and he was just like, he just kind of turned to me. He's like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this guy. I'm over here. Can he give me like 18, 4, and 8 on a bad shooting night so I can just be like, you're not that good? Because this is it's kind of nonsense to the consistency that which this happens. I think too, the one thing I will say, he had 46 points, tied for the most he's ever had in an elimination game, 11 rebounds and 9 assists, and he did it on better than 50% shooting. And I mean, would you say that you were necessarily shocked by that performance? Because I don't think anybody really was shocked.
No, the one time where I was just kind of my jaw dropped is when he hit that second three. The first one, I was like, wow, that wasn't the decision to make that shot. It was like a step back three. I'm not suggesting that LeBron can't hit that with a regular percentage, but that isn't the shot you necessarily want him taking. And he hit a step back three in Horford's face. By the way, we'll get to Horford in a minute. And then he does it again. And after he hit the second one, I was like, well, this is unbelievable. He can't miss. It doesn't matter whether he just got hurt 2 minutes ago. He just can't miss anything. And the Celts can just wave the white flag now. I mean, to their credit, inside of 3 minutes, I think it got down to 7 inside of 3 minutes. And, the way they were hitting shots, a miss and a three and another miss and a three, and the Celts could cut it to 1. So, it was still a game. So those LeBron threes weren't just piling on to a 10-point lead. They were absolutely clutch and necessary.
And on the Boston side of things, you look at some of the box score numbers. They shot 50% from the field. They made more threes than the Cavs, and they did it on 43% from three. What really are the
and they were really good in the fourth quarter too.
Yeah. What really stood out. They went 11 of 20 from the free throw line, and they missed a ton of free throws in that fourth quarter. They turned the ball over 13 times, which and a lot of those I know were within the first half, if I'm not mistaken. And another thing that really jumped out, I mean, they gave up 15 offensive rebounds. They shot 51%. The Cavs were at 47. The thing is, the Cavs had 13 more field goal attempts than the Celtics had.
Yeah. And Jeff Van Gundy said it during the broadcast last night. He said, this is a 7-point game and the Celts have missed 8 free throws. So that kind of tells the tale. You don't suggest that they hit every free throw, but that was the difference in the game. Down late, as you said, they missed 9 free throws. It's a 10-point game. So you hit a bunch more of those, and that last couple of minutes is even more frantic with them extending the game and calling timeouts and the like. They obviously gave it up on the last possession because it was a 10-point game, but you can do the math. If you hit a few more of those free throws, that's an even tighter game down the stretch. I'm glad we had that game last night because it was entertaining. It was the first game that wasn't a real blowout, in that series, and we're going to get a game 7. My initial prediction was Cavs in 6. I'm happy to watch a game 7. I just thought the Cavs would get one of those early ones in Boston. They didn't. And I think their work is cut out for them. I don't think it matters how well LeBron plays. Their work is, if LeBron duplicates his performance on Sunday, they have a chance. But even if he does, the way the Celts have played at home, you could see them edging LeBron, even if he puts up a performance like that, couldn't you?
I think it's very, very possible. And I think the Kevin Love factor is certainly going to matter. I think there were a couple of specific performances that do stick out on the Boston side from this game, where it was another bad Al Horford game. His minus 14 was the worst of anybody that played in the game. 2 of 8 from the field.
6 points. And played over 35 minutes.
Yeah, he had only 6 points. And it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of people were calling, demanding respect for Al Horford based on his performances in round one and round two, and rightfully so. And even in the first two games, he was awesome. But it's just, it's performances like these why I think that Al Horford is never going to really be looked at as that superstar. It's why people are always going to have hesitations crowning him the Celtics' best player, even if maybe he can do more for this team than anybody else can, and even if he is worthy of that, right? Or even if we can all agree that he is the most important player on this team. It's just, at the end of the day, they got a lot of big performances. Terry Rozier played by far and away not just his best road game, maybe his best playoff game with 28 points. He knocked down 6 of 10 from 3, was 10 of 16 from the field. He had 7 assists as well to just 1 turnover, and that ended up not being enough. We'll come back, we'll talk more about this game and also the impact of that Kevin Love injury. So keep it here on Fantasy Sports Today. It's Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh. Keep it locked.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
We are back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and I want to tell you about DailyRoto.com, because you've heard about DailyRoto.com's dollar month here on the network, but I wanted to put it in context for you. Let's say you buy a lottery ticket. You pay your dollar, pick a bunch of numbers, and that's it. You then clutch the ticket, and you hope. Well, now let's say you try DailyRoto.com dollar month. You pay your dollar, get access for 30 days, and you're transported into a world that has produced 5 millionaires. Take destiny into your own hands. Go to DailyRoto.com and enter the code $1. That's DailyRoto.com and enter the code $1 and see if you can make it 6 millionaires. So, Mike, as we're talking about this game, right, and there's a lot of questions, I say, going into Game 7, but I want to ask you something about this Kevin Love concussion, because there was a little bit of talk of it on the timeline last night. Now, Kevin Love has a documented history of concussions. If I'm not mistaken, his reason for missing, I think it was one or two games in the finals that the Cavs actually won, was concussion related. So these issues are there. He goes down with this blow. There's still some chance that he plays in Game 7, I would say. But I just saw some people reacting, just, if this is the NFL, we would kind of be saying that there's no possible way that he could play. Now, my initial takeaway is it is very different, because there's far more head-to-head contact in the NFL. I'm not saying that if Kevin Love doesn't clear whatever the concussion protocol would be for the NBA, that he should still go out there and play. I'm not saying that at all. I'm more so saying if he plays in Game 7, it feels a lot less jarring than a guy getting a really bad concussion in an NFL game and playing shortly after.
I would actually dismiss that. I think trying to compare concussions is an impossibility. Mm-hmm. I know what you're saying, that the collisions in the NFL are more frequent and more violent. That is true, but not every concussion is the same.
Sure.
And there really aren't such things as people tend to use the term mild concussion. That's not really the case. If it qualifies, it qualifies. And there isn't a roadmap or a timeline as to how and when a player can come back. He didn't come back into the game. I think that is significant. That's A. And then B, there's no telling exactly how he's going to recover. Mm-hmm. If down the road we found out he had a concussion and came out for game seven and played with it anyway, then that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
But for right now, I just have to trust what it is that they say. They said they were going to get him some rest last night. That's sort of encouraging, because if he had a full or a serious concussion, I think rest wouldn't necessarily be of primary order. They'd have to be doing a lot of other neurological tests. So that being said, I'm just going to have to wait and see, and I'm not going to make any determination, nor should any fans really or analysts, as to what is happening. It's purely a medical issue, and you have to trust the Cavs to do the right thing.
Now, whether he ends up playing or not is a big question. Under the assumption, let's just say Kevin Love does not play. How drastically would that impact your expectations or the probability of the Cavs being able to win that Game 7?
Absolutely decreases the probability in my mind for them to win. I think you're always going to bet on the best player, but it's as great as he is, and I consider him to be, not including big men because it's too hard to compare, but one of the two best perimeter players of all time. And I would bet on him 9 times out of 10. But going up against a team that hasn't lost at home this postseason and has proven to be really good at home against the Cavs, and the Cavs not so good in Boston, I think their work is cut out for them with a full roster. With Kevin Love out, you have to expect George Hill and or Larry Nance and or Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith to finally show up in order to make this a game, in order to make this a winnable game. So I'd have to side with Boston right now, even though I would never want to bet against LeBron. I just think this could be the 1 out of 10 times.
I think that is totally
fair. If Love is out.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And honestly, the way that Kevin Love has played, I don't know whether, I mean, you'd rather have him than not, of course. I just don't know how much I would be able to rely on, say, you know, 15 and 15 or, you know, 20 and 12, whatever it may be, just because there have been inconsistencies there. It feels very good, or obvious, I should say, to predict LeBron James has an awesome game. I fully expect
that. Yeah, but Kev, you said he's the second best player on the team. He clearly is.
Uh-huh.
And he's far more reliable than anybody else on the entire roster other than LeBron.
That is a great point, because J.R. Smith, he wasn't really even good yesterday, but in Boston he's been not even a zero, he's been a negative. George Hill has clearly been a different player in Boston. It's going to be interesting to see who ends up possibly in that starting lineup if Kevin Love is out. There are a ton of variables now for the Cavs. I will say the thing that becomes interesting is what does this mean for Brad Stevens and his approach with his starting lineup? Aaron Baines started the game, ended up only playing 19 minutes. And I think a lot of that had to do with Kevin Love going to the bench. So Brad Stevens is going to have to, whether you know it's the initial punch or the counter punch to whatever Tyronn Lue's decision is, that will also be factoring in to this game. I will say this one thing, and then I want to talk a little bit about the Rockets-Warriors, because that series is obviously in an interesting spot. There's one thing, and it is silly, and I'm not expecting it, but I really want it, and I want it so badly. I really want LeBron to score 64 in Game 7.
To break the MJ record
against Boston in a game. I mean, for anybody that doesn't know, the all-time playoff single game high MJ owns, it was against the Celtics. He was much younger. He actually lost the game. It went to a couple of overtimes, I know.
In the 80s.
Yeah, I'm not expecting it to happen. There's just a part of me, just because he is obviously forced to score so much more with this group, it's just, I wonder if it's in play at all. Honestly, when he got the N1
They would lose the game
if he scored 64,
because he'd be too tired to be effective defensively. So they would lose if that happened.
Well, that I mean, look, that's the thing. That's not in his nature, right? Like, he's not going to score 64 points and also have, you know, the 9 assists that you probably need, right? So,
look, the signature play, sorry to interrupt, but the signature play of LeBron's career, in my mind, I'll tell you mine, and then you can tell me yours. It's the block against the Warriors.
It is.
It says everything about him. He went 94 feet to chase down Steph Curry from behind and come up with a clean block to then allow Kyrie to hit the shot. I think that says everything about him. And to those people that think he's selfish or whatever, he doesn't have to be humble all the time. And you can get into his histrionics and arguing with the refs and pounding his chest and throwing the powder up in the air. You don't have to love all of that, but you have to appreciate the manner in which he plays. Selfless defensively, distributing the ball, and obviously winning game after game. So he's not perfect. It's all right. MJ wasn't perfect either, especially before Scottie Pippen got there.
I'll say this. He almost topped that moment. I agree that is the defining moment. He almost topped it a few plays after that with the dunk that he almost had on Draymond Green, that where he got fouled and went to the line, made one of two, and that pretty much put the game out of reach and made it a four-point lead. Had he finished that dunk, I think that would have become the moment more so than the block. Nevertheless, obviously, things went well. Let's shift over now to the Rockets and the Warriors series. It's 3-2. And, you know, I remember when we were kind of going over our predictions. You saw how torn I was on making a decision. And even you said Warriors in six because you knew that the Rockets were a good team. There were a ton of people discounting this Rockets team. There were a lot of people who liked to puff their chest out and were saying Warriors in four. They haven't even been trying yet. You can't make any type of arguments now. They've lost three games. They are one game away from elimination. I just want your initial reaction to where this series is currently at.
Well, I thought Warriors in six. I thought they were going to get one of the ones that they did initially, win the couple at home. And I thought the Rockets could win game five down 3-1, and then the Warriors would win game six. I thought this would be the closeout game. But after game one, all the people that had picked the Dubs in four or five or, you know, dismissed, I was technically dismissive of the Rockets because I thought they would get a meaningless second win in this series. You know, down 3-1, getting that one game before they lose in game six, I didn't think it was going to be as close as it has been, clearly. And after game one, a lot of those people, as you said, puffed their chest out. Hey, look, I got it right. I told you they beat a 65-win team on the road by 13 with Steph only hitting 1-3. And it raised my eyebrows, certainly, because I didn't know what the Rockets had in them. But clearly I have more than anybody anticipated. This was a really good team. They are the most efficient offensive team single season in the history of the NBA. And I think they've proven that at points during the series. But what has been amazing has been their ability to play solid defense against the Warriors and their ability to come up with stops and have Kevin Durant go 1 of 9 with 2 rebounds in the fourth quarter of the last two games, I think is indicative of how they've been able to step up defensively, which they really have done, especially since January on. So, yes, I'm surprised. No, I don't think it's over. Yes, I think the Warriors get game six. But it has been surprising because the Rockets have been able to take these last two games. And I don't want to pile too much into this one rant, but if the Warriors lose this series, I will keep going back to the fourth quarter of game four, where they shot 2 of 18. They outplayed the Rockets and then just shot miserably in the fourth quarter, and they handed that game away.
There were so many things I feel to unpack from game four and game five. I mean, really the whole series, right? Like you mentioned in game one, a lot of people were talking about, oh, Houston had James Harden's big game. Steph made 1-3. How could they ever feel good about winning? And it almost feel like all of those games kind of had these little caveats where it's like, that was the game you had to have. This was the game you had to have. Ultimately, though, game four was the game where somehow a 12-0 run to start the game by the Warriors that carried into the first 5 minutes. The Rockets were held scoreless. They were able to come back. They were up almost 10 at half. And then you get into the third quarter, and Steph Curry has the explosion again. And they enter the fourth quarter up 12. And they not only weather the storm, and, I mean, I think a lot of people crumble and fall at that point. Not only did they make it close, they came back and won. And it was, listen, I felt like the Rockets could do it. I ended up picking the Warriors ultimately. And so I'm not here trying to, you know, do any type of victory lap saying, oh, I thought the Rockets could compete. Because I didn't think they could win this way. I knew their defense was good. They're holding Golden State under 100 now multiple times. That is not how that is supposed to go for what has to be the most talented offensive team the NBA has ever seen. Certainly the most offensive firepower. I don't think there's really much of an argument against that. And their defense was top 10 all year. That's fine. You don't play Golden State for 82 games. So for them to win like that is incredible. And again, I mean, you want to talk about some of the caveats. They just beat the Warriors with James Harden going 0 of 11 from 3, 5 of 21 from the field.
He's missed his last 20.
Last 20 threes, exactly. So that carries into game 4.
He's missed his last
20 threes. Chris Paul didn't have a field goal in the first half of game 5. Everyone was talking about how incredible Chris Paul was, and he was. 20.7 boards, 6 assists, 3 steals. Chris Paul was a minus 13 on the game, and he shot 6 of 19 from the field. He was so horrible. He was horrible in that first half.
I think Ian Harden had 11 combined points in the first half of Game 5.
And it's just, they are winning games in a manner that I didn't necessarily feel like it was possible. And one of the things that you had initially talked to me about, and I think that it's something that a lot of it's jumped out to a lot of people, is the play of Kevin Durant. And it feels crazy to say that, right? Like, he had 29 points, but the efficiency isn't there. I'll tell you the thing that jumps out to me, and this is probably rooted in the LeBron stuff, because people have now been trying for years to see if they can push someone ahead of LeBron, and Kevin Durant has been their latest attempt. I mean, no assists, zero assists to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I mean, that, you know, you mentioned the audio bite. It was almost uncomfortable to go back and watch when you consider what actually played out. Like, first of all, Phil Jackson pleading with Michael Jordan to pass to John Paxson feels a lot more reasonable than Steve Kerr having to plead with Kevin Durant to get the ball to Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. I will say perhaps the vice versa is those guys shying away, but just your thoughts, though, on Kevin Durant really struggling here, especially in these fourth quarters.
Well, the first part is that it was uncomfortable to watch that, mainly because Kevin Durant walks away the second time he was talking to me. It almost as if he didn't really want to hear it. Now, I don't know what the relationship is. Perhaps I'm reading too much into it, but, you know, Kerr is a player's guy, so I don't think he gets upset by that kind of stuff. But KD was sort of walking away from Kerr when he was pleading with him a second time during the game. Now, I mentioned before, 1 of 9, 2 rebounds in the fourth quarter combined in games 4 and 5. That's brutal. The Warriors running, I think the stat is 10, more than 10 ISO plays in a game happened 3 times during the entire regular season, 10 plus isolation plays during a particular game. It's happened in every game this series. So regular season 3, this series, all 5 times. So a little bit of too much hero ball. It's going back to the Oklahoma City Thunder days with KD and why they kind of fell apart against the Warriors in that 2016 series. So that's part of it. And I said to you yesterday in sort of a pre-show meeting, a pre-show call, it reminds me of, it's not identical, but it reminds me of when LeBron's first year in Miami, when they lost to the Mavericks, where Dwayne Wade was trying to plead with LeBron to take over and it was his team. And they hadn't really worked out the dynamic yet. And it's odd because KD has now been here a couple of seasons and they don't have it worked out yet. It felt like in these last couple of games. It's odd, but it's just what it seemed like to me. And they're going to have to figure it out, if not tonight, because they should be able to get this game at home, then for game 7 on Monday.
It is incredibly interesting, and I found your comparison very interesting. And one of the things, right, that jumps out is that happened in the first year of the LeBron run. This is now year two.
Yeah.
It's as if the Warriors never actually faced enough of a challenge in year one to actually go through the trials and tribulations that are needed in order to figure out what is your best plan in the late games. If you want in on the conversation, you give us a call at 844-843-6879. When we come back, Mike and I are going to talk a little bit about the identity crisis that is going on with the Warriors and the impact as well of that Chris Paul injury, all coming up here on Fantasy Sports Today.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
We are back here on Fantasy Sports Today. Right now, it is me and Mike Blewett. Subbing in will be George Kurtz coming up at 10 o'clock. You can find us all on Twitter. I am at the Kevin Walsh. George Kurtz. It must be the first George Kurtz. He got at George Clark, George Kurtz rather. And Mike, you can find him at Mike Blewett. The both of you guys, just you didn't have to add any special characters there. You got the full name.
Got in early enough. Just got my name and that's it. Keep it easy. MikeBlewitt on Twitter. You're going to get fired up. You're going to talk some hockey with George at 10. He's fired up. Vegas.
Caps. There he is. I can't wait to get into it with George because he's one of the smartest guys I know when it comes to hockey. And I'm excited to watch both teams in the Stanley Cup. So that's what we're going to do at the top of the next hour. But Mike, let me ask you when it comes to this Warriors-Rockets stuff, right? Because you know, Kevin Durant was still actually a +2 for the game as opposed to Curry, Draymond, and Clay, who are all -9s for this game, right? So, it's one of those things. I mean, plus minus can be misleading, right? But Kevin Durant is out there, and you can't say he's playing bad, right? Like, he still had 29 points. But here is something that kind of crossed my mind, and I want to run it by you. As I was watching this game, it's as if the ISOs that Kevin Durant it has to force into the way that the Warriors were. It is so different from what used to define them. It almost has a Westbrook level impact. Now, it is not to the degree of Russ where it is dribble for 20 seconds and then throw something crazy up, right? Like, there are still sets to be ran and they get the ball low block to mid-range area, and KD has a nice mismatch and he sometimes won't even dribble because he can shoot over literally anybody. But it seems to be disrupting their flow. And the one thing that is so odd to me is the Warriors are kind of, that's what they're chasing, though. It's not like a situation where Kevin Durant is simply demanding the basketball, refusing to pass necessarily. Their sets are ran to get Kevin Durant these ISO looks. Steph Curry comes across half court and immediately gives the ball up. Draymond Green's first read used to always be Steph, and now it seems like it's always Kevin Durant.
Yeah, so Tim Legler from ESPN did a masterful job breaking this down on the Telestrator. By the way, he also might be the best Telestrator guy in all of sports. He was breaking down the isolations, the mistakes that were made. And in some cases during live play, they don't seem egregious. But as you slow it down, you realize that he's passing up opportunities to hand it off to Klay Thompson, who could get a better shot. And he's taking it into the lane, and the lane's clogged up. There's 2, 3, 4 guys there. And he's forcing up contested shots. I understand that Kevin Durant is talented enough to hit contested jumpers at the mid-range. But as we've seen now in the NBA, it is an analytical foot race. You are trying to get the best shots available on every possession. And over time, you are going to be more successful. It doesn't mean that guys can't hit low percentage shots or that the better players can't hit the lower percentage shots at a higher rate. But it is extremely important that you run your sets in order to get the best shots possible, especially when Klay Thompson and Steph Curry are on your team, and even Draymond Green to an extent. And Kevin Durant has passed that up in instances where he shouldn't. That's the bottom line.
I will say one of the things that can kind of put into perspective for just how deep this Warriors team is and just how many guys they have that are held in high regard. It was after this game, right? Like, think about if a performance like this came out of Cleveland, there's one man who is really going to get the focus of the criticism, and that's LeBron, right? And a lot of people then will say, you know, that Ty Lue should be fired or the other supporting players didn't do their job, but that burden still weighs heavy on the shoulder of LeBron. We come out of this game, and there's a long rant that you can go on Kevin Durant and the fact that he's now had zero assists multiple times in this series, might be the only seven-footer actually in this series, and the fact that he's had four rebounds in that game is another really, really bad look. You could do a lot of time on the fact that Draymond Green just does not look himself, and he still had some good games, but Dray does not look himself. You can talk about the fact that Steve Kerr is certainly getting out-coached right now pretty handedly by Mike D'Antoni, where, you know, MDA didn't feel any pressure after game one. He has been, and, you know, some people have said, he doesn't seem like he believes what he's saying. But he even said going in to the game, I think it was game four, when they were down 2-1, he's like, no, the pressure's on Golden State. Where he's saying, he's like, nah, the pressure's on them. Like, they have to do this. Like, we know what we're going to do. And it seems like Steve Kerr is just not answering the bell at the moment. And Steph Curry, again, listen, a lot of people feel as if Steph Curry, you know, it's up or down, right? Like, there are days where Steph Curry looks like he's going to light the world on fire, and he does. There are days where he looks scared of the moment. There are days where the threes aren't falling. So there are so many guys that could actually really wear the burden of this play.
Here's what I'd say on Kerr. I suppose you can make an argument that he's getting outcoached. The Rockets are, frankly, running their offense to a better degree than the Warriors are. And he's very good because of what he's been through in his career and winning five championships with multiple organizations. He understands that it is no time to panic in the moment. You can't ever panic. You can't flinch. Otherwise, it can take you out of what you're trying to do. But I think what he obviously knows, something is wrong in the moment because he is talking to Kevin Durant about trying to get him to stop playing hero ball. It isn't their offense. It isn't working. We've just quoted the stats multiple times, and he's going to have to figure out a way to shake it off. I do think he's good enough to do it. And look, the Rockets, to some extent, are punting game six. they know that Chris Paul's hamstring injury is extremely problematic. And why go out and make him give an effort tonight if there's a chance to lose? And look, it's at Golden State. There's a good chance to lose if they play well. So there's no reason to make him give an effort in game six when you really need him for game seven. So give him the extra rest. Try to win game seven. I think it doesn't mean they're not going to try tonight, but it's significantly going to decrease their chances with Chris Paul. He's not more important than James Harden, but Chris Paul, the reason they started winning these games is because Chris Paul started playing his tail off when he didn't play well in those couple of games. Back at the beginning of the series, they didn't really have a chance. And now here we are. He played well in games four and game five, and they're in the lead.
Yeah, I want to, before we get to the Chris Paul thing, I do want to say the one thing that I find odd is that Steve Kerr has that discussion, yet all of the plays seem to still be ran for Kevin Durant. It's an incredibly odd dynamic. I'm very interested to see how they progress and how they come out. On the Chris Paul thing, you know, whether they're punting game six or not, I don't necessarily know whether was he a full go. Like, Chris Paul seemed like he was under the kind of the expectation that he was going to play in Game 6 as he was leaving the arena. And there's been no official word that he's necessarily going to be good to go, assuming there would be a Game 7. The one thing I will say, and it's probably wild, but would at any point would it cross your mind to really punt this, right? Like, think about in a fantasy, right? Like, if you're going to punt saves, don't draft a closer. If you're going to do it, there's no reason then to just have a close. Like, that makes no sense. Does it really make a ton of sense for them to go out there and burn James Harden if, I mean, this is a guy who seemed to be struggling with fatigue as this series carries on. Are you sure
he has to get his shot going? Yeah, he has to get his shot going.
I agree with that.
And I think you're always going to take your swings. It doesn't mean, look, George, who we'll bring on here in a minute. Yeah, you can punt a category for your fantasy baseball team, but it doesn't mean that you don't make any effort.
Right.
You can still make an effort and choose to not try to be the best in a particular category. If you come in seventh in saves out of your 12-man baseball league, it doesn't mean that you've entirely punted it. You can just not, you can have a draft strategy that's more conservative. Similarly, in this game, it doesn't mean that they're going to not take all their swings in the first half, in the third quarter. But if they can't keep up and Eric Gordon isn't hitting shots and PJ Tucker isn't the best X-factor guy in the entire playoffs who's not named Marcus Smart, then maybe they call off the dogs in the fourth quarter. But you don't know if somebody else gets hurt, if the Warriors have a miserable shooting night, you could steal this one too. But it's the smart play, in my estimation, to not bring Chris Paul out there, or at least I wouldn't even travel him. And I heard Jalen Rose say this yesterday and Mike Greenberg yesterday as well. And I was in lockstep with them because I think you just try to have him healthy for Game 7. And even if he played Game 6 and Game 7 here, he could tax his hamstrings so much he could be out for the finals if you win one of those games.
No, that is a good point. I'd like to try to see if I could have him travel, because I'd still like to have his mind on the bench and see what that could do for me. Because there was an analogy made that I actually really loved. And it was kind of a callback to last year in the playoffs with the Rockets and the Spurs. It was made by Shea Serrano, who writes over at The Ringer, where Game 5, Kawhi goes down, they hold on, and they go into Game 6, and they're kind of punting the game. They hold Kawhi out, the game's in Houston, they say, do your thing, we'll see you Game 7 with our guy healthy, and the Spurs beat the crap out of the Rockets. I mean, they obliterated the Rockets. Now, obviously, this Rockets team is not, or last year's Rockets team, rather, is not as good as this version of Golden State. But the way that Golden State has struggled in terms of getting their offense flowing, and because of pretty much how the Rockets are defined by all of these threes, they get a few going, and it's just one of those James Harden nights. I have to be honest, I would not be surprised to see this series end in 6 games.
I'll be surprised, but it's not inconceivable. That's the best way I could put it. It would surprise me. If Chris Paul doesn't play and the Warriors lose at home, yeah, hell yeah, I'd be stunned. But it's not inconceivable because this Rockets team is that good.
If you would have told me that at the beginning of the series, I would have said that is complete nonsense. It's just the way things are right now. I don't know. I wonder if it is in the cards. I wonder if it is there. The spread on the game is a
don't overthink it, Kev. Don't overthink it.
You're right.
This is going Game 7.
You're right. No, you're probably right, right? I guess I would be more shocked. I guess perhaps I think the way you put it is better. It is possible. It is not an outcome that which I cannot at all foresee or whatever, but it is, I guess it would be surprising. It's -12. The Warriors are favored tonight, which is a really big number for a team that has lost 2 games in a row, but obviously going home, needing the game, Chris Paul being out. How would you feel about that -12?
I would hate to lay that many points, and Vegas is begging you to take the Rockets, but I would lay the points if you were pinning me to it. It's probably a game I would stay away from because of all the factors we just talked about, but I think this one gets a little crazy. You know, we saw blowouts early in this series. I think we see another one tonight. The Rockets are going to give it an effort for the first half. The Warriors go on another third quarter explosion. I don't think they give it up this time like they did in game four. So there you have it. I think I would lay the points. And tomorrow is 2.5.
Yeah.
Boston laying 2.5. I'll take the Cavs just because maybe I get a 2-point game and I side with LeBron. I get to put both of those in my back pocket, even though it seems unlikely that Boston's going to lose at home. I'm going to bet on the best player with the points in my back pocket.
Points and LeBron feels a little unfair. I'm anticipating the Cavs win the game. The fact that I would be getting points, I would jump on immediately. In terms of the minus 12, the number is lofty. It's one of those things where I did just say, right? Like I just said, I could see the Rockets winning. They very well, like them winning would actually be far more surprising than them getting blown out by 40. So you probably phrase that in a much better way. I wouldn't feel great about laying 12. I'd probably prefer to play it safe, and then I would just take Houston getting that many points. But again, there's a ton of logic behind assuming that the Warriors are going to go out there and run them over. I think it's very possible. All right, we got just a few minutes left, Mike. The stages are set,
yeah,
right?
Okay, go ahead.
You had I think it was Cavs, Warriors going in. You thought they would both end in six. Now one of them is going to go seven. If the Warriors want to win, it's going to go seven. What are your anticipations for the finals, or at least whom will be?
I'm not going to back away from my team picks, so I'll stick with the Cavs and the Warriors. I feel more concerned about the Cavs because I don't think those other guys are going to step up for LeBron. I think he could come up with a huge Game 7 LeBron performance and lose. But if the Warriors get back to doing what they need to do, I still think they're a little better than the Rockets.
I think it's fair. I anticipate the Cavs win. I think too, and it's probably silly to do it, right? Because we've expected the Celtics to tense up all year. But I think a Game 7 against LeBron with a trip to the finals on the line, I could see some guys having some bad games. Like Tatum looked like a rookie last night. I could see Al Horford shrinking in some spots. And it's just, of all of the things, I can guarantee to you that LeBron plays phenomenal. And that's what I'll be banking on. In terms of the Rockets-Warriors thing, I don't want to switch off of it. I said part of the reason I picked the Warriors.
Don't switch. Don't switch. Never switch.
I won't switch. It feels way different. Because one of the things is I felt good that no matter what, Kevin Durant would be great. And I mean, I watched game two. Kevin Durant scored 38 points and no assists and they lost by 20. So I'm not sure.
By the way,
I won't switch.
I do have a quick question for you. You would know this better than me. Is Iguodala scheduled to play tonight?
At the moment, it has not been said. I don't know if I would expect him. I almost feel like they'll probably say, listen, if we're winning or losing this game, I don't think it should be coming down to Iguodala.
I think they dress him and he doesn't play until they need him.
I think that's fair. All right, that'll do it for Mike in hour one. That'll do it for basketball. We come back, George Kurtz jumps in. We're talking about the Stanley Cup. That's next here on Fantasy Sports Today.